Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. And thanks to Ron Trammell and the Cats Tribute Band for our intro music. Today is Friday, February 25th, 2022. It's a cold and clear morning here in Nashville after a soggy couple of days of rain. Okay, it's well known that I am a plant nerd. I spend significant amounts of my time in the garden and just observing what's growing in our landscape. And on this podcast, we often talk about the landscape, trees, grasslands, and promoting native gardening. I also love the fact that Tennessee citizens are organized in their advocacy for the environment, even the plant nerds. In Tennessee, there are numerous organizations comprised of citizens interested in environmental stewardship and/or just learning about nature. In many ways, they are the beating heart of the conservation movement here in Tennessee. In today's interview, I speak with Bart Jones about the Tennessee Native Plant Society. As you will hear, this organization has a long history of promoting learning about nature and conservation advocacy. They are citizen scientists working hard to cultivate their own knowledge about native plants and their relationship to our ecology. They are often called upon to assist public agencies and strive to provide educational programs for the public at large, and they have their work cut out for them. The threats to the native landscape are real, and ordinary citizens are often lacking in insight about what's growing on the landscape. And so it was great fun to talk with Bart about the Native Plant Society, and I would encourage our listeners to check out their website and learn about their activities. And our interview will get started after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Bart Jones, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Bart, thank you for agreeing to join me and to represent the Tennessee Native Plant Society in our conversation today.
That's correct. Yes. All right.
So you're coming to us from Memphis, Tennessee. Of course, in Nashville, and we've got a kind of a bleak, rainy day here.
Same here. It started out with ice, but now it's just rain.
All right. Well, Bart, I want to talk to you about what's going on with the Native Plant Society and kind of inform my listeners about that organization and what it does and maybe encourage their involvement in it. As we get started, though, I want to hear just a little bit about yourself. I know you're one of the directors of the Native Plant Society, but you're not a professional in conservation work. You are a research scientist of some sort.
That's true. I work at St. Jude. That's my job. But okay. I've always been interested in field biology, plants especially, conservation work. So that's always been something that's been a big part of my life, even before I started working at St. Jude. I was a past president of the Native Plant Society.
Right.
And I've been involved since 2000 with them.
Well, that's just fun. And you in your growing up had some experiences involving plants and nature that got you turned on to this sort of thing.
Yeah, when I was a kid, of course, we lived in the country outside of Parsons, Tennessee.
That's country for sure.
That is very country.
Yeah.
And my grandmother lived right behind us. And so we would spend lots of time with her down in the woods, looking at all the plants, and especially ginseng and other medicinal plants. And her grandfather was a doctor.
Oh, I
and
see.
Of course, back then, that was probably, you know, how they treated people was with native plants and poultices and things like that. And mm-hmm. she kind of knew all of the things that were medicinal and what you could do with them and how to make different things. And of course, as a kid, I really didn't pay that much attention to that. I was more interested in, you know, going down to the creek to fish or whatever else. But she kind of instilled that respect and love for nature and particularly the plants. And she always had flowers everywhere. So that was kind of the beginnings of my interest in all of this.
Very
and science
cool.
and everything.
Very cool. And you, I read that you went to UT Martin.
That's correct. Yeah, I got my bachelor's degree from UT Martin. Yeah, in biology.
In biology.
Yeah.
Well, that's just very cool. And so, let's talk about the Native Plant Society. And a lot of people might not even know that there is such a thing as that.
We were established in 1978, so we've been around for a while.
Right.
It's a statewide organization, and the membership is statewide, of course, and that's allowed us to cover a large area, and yet we also are sort of a diffuse group. So it's not like a lot of other societies where you have a lot of meetings every month or whatever and do a lot of things together. We have tended to be able to substitute our meetings with field trips. And that's kind of how our membership gathers together is mm-hmm. We will have these field trips all over the state and then people will come and you meet people that way. We do have one meeting a year. That's an annual meeting, annual membership meeting that all the people are invited to come to. And we typically have 40 to 50 people at that meeting out of the membership of over 400.
I see. Well, I can remember first becoming aware of the Native Plant Society back in 1979 or 1980. I worked with Dr. Paul Summers at yeah. the Tennessee Department of Conservation. Of course, he's moved on, but I sort of have a notion that he was involved in the organization of that from the very beginning.
Yeah, he was. You know, a lot of the beginnings of the society were based around UT Knoxville and a lot of the botanists that were at UT Knoxville. And of course, also because you're looking in the field for usually a lot of rare plants, we would work with the people at the state in the Department of Natural Heritage or TDEC or whatever.
That's right. That's where Paul was at the time.
Yeah. And
right.
so that's, right. he was probably involved with us as far as coordinating for rare species monitoring and things like
right.
that.
Exactly. I'm certain he was involved with the designation of the Tennessee coneflower as a separate species from the other Echinacea species that we see around.
Right. And that was the first plant that was protected under the Endangered Species Act.
No kidding.
Yeah.
The first Tennessee plant or the first plant?
The first plant.
Wow.
Because, I mean, the Endangered Species Act was enacted, you know, in the 70s. And
right.
it was one of the very first things that was.
So it made the list of the very beginning. Right.
Right. At the very right. beginning. Yes. And in the subsequent years, people have done such a good job with reestablishing it and finding some new populations. So a few years ago, it got delisted from the endangered species.
Right, right. Of course, that's a plant that occurs in our Cedar Glade communities or ecological communities that exist in Middle Tennessee for the most part.
Right.
Right. Around Lebanon and Wilson County, those areas have cedar glades where the soils are so thin that there's the plant communities there are special.
Exactly. I mean, there are endemics there that are found nowhere else in the world. Some of the rarest plants in the United States are found there.
So, Bart, why should the average citizen really care about native plants?
Well, you know, native plants are the basis of most of all the food chain. And if you get rid of say an insect that uses a plant for its host, like a butterfly, you get rid of that, and then you get rid of the insect. And if you get rid of the insect, you get rid of the birds that depend on the caterpillars of that insect. Right. And then you get rid of the prey birds that feed on them. And, you know, the ripple effect, it's like the butterfly wings in the hurricane. Sometimes it's hard to imagine how much impact one native plant may, its disappearance may actually have. So, especially in a community situation, like an ecological community, all of these things are interdependent.
Right.
And if you take one bit out, or you introduce one thing in that shouldn't be there, it can just wreak havoc. And, you know, all the wildlife depends on these things.
You know, Bart, as I talk to let's just say the man or woman on the street, the person that doesn't have any special interest or training in biology or ecology, they might not know what is a native plant. What is that? I mean, I know that the other side of the coin is maybe we refer to as exotics. Mm-hmm. But tell us about that. How do we determine what's a native, and how can a person that goes into to purchase plants for their garden know the difference?
Well, you know, that is a big problem. And, you know, most horticultural plants are not native. There are some, and it's good to know those, because, you know, we want to support gardening and nurseries and people who are willing to invest and put their efforts into a native plant.
Right.
But a native plant is something that occurs naturally in your area. It doesn't require any manipulation to get it to grow and to thrive. It's going to find its niche in whatever community that it would normally be in. There are things that we consider almost native wildflowers, like daisies and heal-all, that are actually European in origin. Some things have been able to kind of intertwine themselves into our natives and not cause a lot of damage.
Right.
But then you have things like Japanese privet and some of these other Asian exotics that have come in, and when they don't have any of their predators or things that would use them in their native Asian habitats, and they come in here and they start to expand wildly. And the habitat is usually so close that there's nothing to put the brakes on them.
Right.
And they do well as garden plants. I mean, people love things that grow well.
Right.
But then again, if they get out, if the habitat's too similar to what they came from,
right,
then it can overtake a natural community. I mean, privet in particular, you know, I can take you to places around Memphis in the Wolf River area that there are almost solid thickets of privet where nothing else can grow because it gets completely shaded out.
Okay, so for the listener who's trying to put that into perspective, privet is the hedge that people have growing around the fronts of the yards that they use the hedge trimmers to keep so finely trimmed.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got beautiful white flowers that smell great. It has, you know, fruit that the birds love. I mean, just because something's exotic doesn't mean that the wildlife won't use it.
Right.
But the problem is that you start to have this degradation of your habitat when they get out, because the birds love the fruit so much they spread the seed everywhere.
Right.
And our area is so similar in habitat to what would be in Asia for that they grow, you know, wildly.
Right.
And so you can have areas where you've completely competed out all of the natives. And of course, there are animals and things that use native plants that don't use privet in any way.
Right.
And then those plants disappear. And then suddenly you start to lose those insects or animals that are using the natives.
Exactly. Well, tell us about the activities of the Native Plant Society. Now, you mentioned that you do some field trips.
Yeah.
I noticed looking at your website just recently that you've got a couple things on the agenda coming up.
Right. We have there'll be a series of hikes that'll be all over the state, and they usually start in early spring and go through to the middle of fall, sometimes even late into fall. Typically 10 to 12 trips for the year. And I don't believe that the website has it updated with the new list yet, but the first trip will be April the 2nd, and I'll be leading that at Ghost River Natural Area.
Just okay, outside of Memphis.
Yeah, it's
okay.
In Fayette County, yeah.
All right, so that's just to the east of Memphis, right?
Just to the east of Memphis, yeah. Right.
And what's going to be the focus of that trip?
That trip will be to see one of our native orchids. It's an early blooming orchid. It's very, very rare in Tennessee. It's mainly southern, and we're at the northern limit of its distribution. So it's the southern twayblade orchid.
I think many people would be surprised to know that there are native orchids in Tennessee.
Yeah, there are 50 native orchids in Tennessee.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that many. I was going to say 30 or so.
No, there's 50. And that's kind of how I got involved.
That's a special interest of yours, orchids. Yes.
You're right, because when I was a kid, we purchased a property just north of where we lived, it's still in Decatur County. And when we went to visit it the first time, we just happened to time it, luckily, that there were lady slippers on the property blooming. And at the time, in the mid-70s, when we went to see that, there was only one yellow lady slipper that people thought of. It was just one species. Mm-hmm. But when I looked in the wildflower books, it was like, it doesn't look like that. And lo and behold, you know, later on, it was determined to be a new species and was described in 1980.
Oh my goodness! You didn't get your name on that new species, did you?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get my name on it. But, no, they did describe it. You know, several years after we had purchased that property, and I'd seen them, and that's what drew me into natives was the fact that there was something so exotic and so special that was on my property, and so orchids have been a love of mine ever since.
Bart, you know, this brings to mind this whole notion of the citizen scientist. Mm-hmm. And you've stepped in, and you know, the folks that work in the botany departments at the university can't be all places at all times.
Right.
But I guess it's fair to say that the Native Plant Society really is an organization of citizen scientists.
In many respects, that's very true. One of the things that we've done and still continue to do is to inventory places. So the state will often they will ask us to go and look through some properties that they've just purchased and make plant lists for them and to look for anything that might be rare. And we've done that several times with some land purchases like that. Sometimes individuals that think they have some very special plants will contact somebody, and we will send somebody to go and look through their property and see what they've got.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's really fascinating. Now, I noticed that Nashville Lawn and Garden Fair is coming up here in the next month or so, and right. I noticed that you all will be having a booth out there.
That's correct. We share a booth with some of our sister organizations, especially the Tennessee Invasive Plant Council.
That's right.
Yeah. We work closely with them because we're like the yin and the yang. They're working from the end of, you know, the invasive non-natives, and we're working from the end of the natives, and we meet in the middle trying to make sure that all our habitats and communities are balanced.
Cool. And am I correct that Marge Hunter is going to be making a talk at that show?
I mean, Margie's involved with the Tennipsi people and with us also. Right. I don't know for sure whether she's actually doing a talk or not, but Margie will be there the majority of the time, I'm sure.
I would encourage people to go to the website for the Tennessee Native Plant Society, also the Facebook page for the Tennessee yes. Native Plant Society. And I don't believe there's any barrier to signing up to see any of those things.
No. Yeah. We encourage the public. You don't have to be a member of the Native Plant Society to go to any of the field trips. We encourage you to look at all the stuff that we have on the website, and our Facebook page gives you the most up-to-date, latest information of anything that we might be doing or we're supporting. Right. So I would encourage everybody to, you know, bookmark those and visit them, you know, as often as you can, because you'll learn a lot. There'll be a lot of stuff on there.
Well, and we have a great big state. It's 9 hours to drive east to west,
Oh,
and
how I
I'm
know.
yes, and I do as well. But I've noticed that you all do sort of sprinkle your field trips around the state, so that they're more available to citizens locally.
Right, yeah, we have people that lead trips all over the state. So that's one thing. It makes it very convenient. But we do try to make an effort to at least include each grand division in a couple of field trips every year. Because our membership is mainly concentrated in Middle Tennessee, we tend to have more in Middle Tennessee, but we do try to make sure that we spread it out. And I think this year we go all the way from my trip at Ghost River in Fayette County, and we have one in the summer all the way over in the Smoky Mountains. So we cover the entire basic width of the state.
Are you all involved in the spring wildflower pilgrimage in the Smokies, or is that a garden club,
No,
strictly a garden club thing?
we work with people that run, Joy Shaw, that is kind of the head of the Wildflower Pilgrimage now. We've worked with him on lots of projects, including the pilgrimage. Many of our members are also field trip leaders.
I see.
So when you go on any of the trips, you're going to see a lot of Tennessee Native Plant Society people.
Well, years ago, I worked for the city of Gatlinburg and first became aware of that event each year because it was a mob scene and all these garden club ladies coming in to
Oh,
see
yeah.
the wildflowers in the park. And I guess today it's a very rare ticket to be able to get in to do. And you got to register early in order to reserve a
Yeah.
spot.
Yes, you definitely have to get on the ball early if you want to go to see the things that you want to see.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'd encourage anyone that's got a an interest in native plants or wildflowers to check that out. The Tennessee Annual Wildflower Pilgrimage in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. It's really quite an event.
Yeah, if you don't live in an area where there are masses of wildflowers in the woods, it's shocking to people to see how many and how vast there can be patches of, almost acres of wildflowers underneath the trees blooming at that time. It's just amazing in places.
So, Bart, do you garden yourself?
I don't do a whole lot of gardening, no. I'm kind of the oddball when it comes to that. I've always been a little bit more attracted to the science side of the native plants. I mean, I love to go out. I've got a small garden, but no, I'm not the gardener when it comes to that.
Well, I understand. Let's talk about policy and legislation. And I know from my own experience that the Native Plant Society, along with the Nature Conservancy and the Audubon Society and the various environmental groups, now years ago they used to all bind together with the Tennessee Environmental Council. And to advocate in our state legislature for environmental legislation. Is the Native Plant Society involved along those lines these days?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We've been partners with the Tennessee Conservation Voters for years, and
Gotcha.
we have representatives that go to their board meetings, and they also report back to us with any legislative activities that they would possibly want us to write letters of support on. We definitely have been involved with several local groups to try to get things protected or to be recognized within municipalities or whatever. So we don't involve ourselves heavily in politics, but then again, we support those that do.
Right.
And Tennessee Conservation Voters has been very active promoting, protection of native lands and communities like that.
I wonder if there's any particular issue that's sort of on the docket these days that you might tell us about.
I mean, it's still just the constant fight to keep the land from being degraded further. I mean, it's just Tennessee in general has had a lot of human influence as far as, agriculture, and the cities are growing and expanding, and you know, especially for people like, you know, you're familiar around Nashville, all of the Cedar Glades are just completely surrounded now by a lot of urban, not urban sprawl, but suburban sprawl, I guess. And, you know, that kind of thing is still one of our main focuses. In it, water builds, you know, there's always, you always kind of have to be on guard, because if you ever kind of relax and let up, people take advantage of it.
You know, the this may be an issue that the Invasive Plant Council is more involved in or interested in, but there has been some interest in the regulation of what can be sold by retail nurseries along the lines that we spoke earlier of the invasive exotic plants. You know, it, in some states, it's illegal to sell the Chinese privet commercially, or the Japanese honeysuckle commercially. Is the Native Plant Society involved with the advocacy for any of that sort of thing? Or,
well, we're definitely advocates for that, but you know, not directly. But like I said, we we always view TNPSI as kind of like a sister organization, and so that's kind of the side that we allow them to focus on and do that. And we're very supportive of it. One thing that I would, we encourage our membership to, if they go to their local nursery or Home Depot, Lowe's type big box store, is when you see some of these plants being sold, just say something to the managers. You'll be surprised at a few negative comments and how much that'll impact what that person will actually purchase, because it's a local person at some point that's saying, we want these plants. And if you're saying, I don't want to see any more calorie pears, or I don't want to see you selling privet, it can be very invasive and destroy, you know, native communities. You just strike up a conversation. Don't be, you know, belligerent, militant. Be, you know, kind and concerned. Because it is a concern. It's your concern, and just voice your concern. And so we encourage people to do that. Leave a note. If you don't see anybody, leave a note and say, you know, this plant's very invasive and I'm concerned that you're selling it.
Yes, I noticed one of the nurseries here in Nashville was selling the winter creeper, the euonymus vine. I made a comment, and I don't know whether they took it to heart, but that stuff is a noxious weed for sure.
Yeah. And the thing is if you say it, they might, you know, one person, it might not make an impact, but then if two or three other people come in and say the same thing, then they'll think, well, you know, maybe there is something to this and people are, you know, going to get turned off on this.
You know, I think, Bart, many of the, of my listeners would certainly know that, that Tennessee is one of the leading states in the landscape industry.
Oh yeah.
That, and that area, particularly around McMinnville and that southern tier, over there through over, all the way over to Winchester, Tullahoma, they produce a whole lot of nursery stock.
Yeah.
And much of which is not native, but you know, not all non-native things are bad. But my point is that it's a major industry in Tennessee.
And the thing is if you really are looking at a list of things that people buy in the nursery trade, it's, you know, there's not that many that are considered to be extremely invasive that we would want to have on a no-buy list. It's not like we're trying to completely eliminate people's ability to garden with things that aren't native.
Right, exactly.
But then again, there are things that do cause and are recognized to cause a lot of harm. And those are the things that we really are trying to focus on.
You know, the one that comes to mind right now is the Bradford pear for some reason or another. And you mentioned just a moment ago the calorie pear, and that's what we're speaking of, is the is the Bradford pear. And there are numerous other iterations of it, but they all derive from a Chinese, a native Chinese pear tree. And that's that particular tree, although it was supposed to be not able to reproduce, has found a way to reproduce itself and is out there on the landscape in Tennessee, which we're about to see in about 2 or 3 weeks. We're going to start seeing that start to bloom.
Yes, we will.
People should pay attention. But definitely that's a plant that doesn't need to be in the trade at this point.
I agree completely. It's kind of like the Jurassic Park of the plant world. You know, life finds a way.
Exactly.
And they were supposed to have been sterile. And it's not really clear if there was a mutation that overcame that or if there were some unscrupulous people that decided that they could sell things that weren't the clone that was supposed to be sterile and snuck it in there. But the end result is that you can find, you know, bottomlands around here in Memphis that are just completely covered in a grove of Callery pear.
Right.
And they're beautiful in the spring, and then they're horrible looking now that we've had a huge ice storm and everything's all broken and gnarled and mangled.
Right. They're certainly not, very stress tolerant. That's for sure.
No, they're quick growers. They have a lot of, you know, characteristics that all garden plants that people love have.
Right.
But then again, in the long term, they're not even good for landscaping because they do become ugly as they break and fall apart. And they have fallen out of favor. That's one good thing that they kind of destroyed themselves because people are like, this just is not working out, you know.
You know, I think the landscape architects that were specifying these trees in, when a subdivision was being put in and or a park was being put in, have now gotten wise to the Bradford pear, and they're just not specking them anymore.
Right. Yeah. It was good for 7 or 8 years, and then it started to have issues. And most homeowners are not going to be willing to completely redo their landscape every 5 to 7 years. You know, that can get very expensive very quickly.
Right. Well, Bart, you've been very kind to spend some time with us to talk about the Tennessee Native Plant Society. And I want to encourage our listeners to check you out, get on the web and find out about their activities and get out there and go for a hike with the native plant folks. And I know that they're not going to expect you to be, a botany specialist when you go. Everyone starts with a blank slate of knowledge, and you only learn when you go out and experience.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have every imaginable point on the spectrum when you go to one of the things. And another thing that I really try to emphasize and promote for people that come to our field trips is there are going to be people that are experts in fields other than wildflowers. We're out there looking at nature. So we're going to look at birds, butterflies, plants, you name it, snakes, salamanders, the whole thing is there. And there's going to be somebody on that trip that's going to know something about it. And you'll be able to learn about everything. And that's a great thing about it.
Well, you know, as I was learning these things, I was often sort of put off by folks who use the Latin nomenclature all the time as they went walking in the woods. Now, I've come to have an appreciation for that, and I've actually learned a little of it myself. But you don't have to know the Latin nomenclature to participate and to learn.
Oh, absolutely not. And if you catch us doing it, just say, hey, speak English.
Well, and then sometimes you can actually learn a little bit if you delve into the actual Latin expression that's used to name the plant. You can actually get an insight into why a plant was named a particular thing.
Absolutely.
So that's part of the fun part of learning. Well, Bart, thanks again for joining us today on the Mark Fraley podcast. I hope if you get up this way, you'll come and say hey.
Oh, it would be great. That would be fun. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you.